Cytiva, now with the life sciences business from Paul, is a global provider of technologies, services, and expertise to help researchers and companies protect and preserve the planet for improved human health and safety. With a rich heritage dating back hundreds of years, Cytiva brings a wealth of technical expertise and talent, a broad and deep portfolio, and exceptional service to help researchers and industry labs at every stage from source to shelf. Visit Cytiva.com to learn more.
This is the Master Brewers Podcast, brought to you by the Master Brewers Association of the Americas, a volunteer organization dedicated to continually improving the products and processes of our membership since 1887. Let's go! Master Brewers brings you interviews with the industry's best and brightest in brewing science, technology, and operations.
Calm down, I'm moving too fast.
This episode was made possible by the following sponsors.
Discover more ways to enhance flavor and maximize beer yields with Salvo. Now available in varieties like Sultana, Trident, Lotus, Calypso, Cascade, and many more. Discover how Salvo can help boost your brew at hopsteiner.com.
Berkeley Yeast, creators of diacetyl-free yeast strains. Diacetyl-free strains are bioengineered to produce the ALDC enzyme inside the yeast cell to keep diacetyl low during fermentation and after packaging. Diacetyl-free strains create the cleanest flavor profile possible, which makes them the yeast of choice for the most exacting brewer. Go to berkeleyyeast.com to read about how brewers are using diacetyl-free strains to propel their beers to the top of the podium.
Attention all brewing professionals dedicated to operational excellence. Enhance your brewing processes with Brewmax by ProLite. Our sophisticated brewing management software is designed to optimize production, ensuring the highest quality brews. Unleash the full potential of your brewing operations. Visit our website to learn more. Brewmax, empowering brewing excellence from grain to glass.
When you're kind of looking down as a brewer and you have no idea how much it costs to make your the main beer that you sell, it's terrifying when you sit in that seat and you can't answer that question when someone asks it. This unit economic process that we did really changed the course of our business and our thought process. It gives you a sound footing to give feedback to the rest of the company from the production side.
This week on the show, how a brewer who didn't know the cost of his flagship beer implemented a unit economic process that transformed the brewery.
How's it going? I'm Teddy Gowan. I'm the VP of Brewing at Society Brewing Company in San Diego, California.
I have to admit, I was on the fence about doing this episode. Because technically, it doesn't clearly pass my litmus test of, will this episode help someone make better beer?
Yeah.
And the topic feels more Brewers Association than Master Brewers. But the committee of folks who propose guests and topics really like you, Teddy, and think this topic is something that all brewers need to focus on to survive. So here we are. So don't let me down, okay?
I like it. No pressure.
All right.
I agree with everything you just said, by the way. I was kind of surprised about it. I was like, well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, it's no secret that the things have been kind of rough the last couple of years. And, you know, people got to focus on this stuff if they want to be around next year. So I think that's kind of where the consensus was at. So, all right, Teddy, what exactly is it that you want to help other brewers accomplish here?
So we kind of went through we started packaging in 2020, really, right? Right before COVID. And we learned a lot of lessons. It was kind of a rocky road when we started packaging, and we learned a bunch of things. And ideally through that, through kind of the things that we went through and the things that we had to troubleshoot, will be helpful to other brewers. I am a production brewer. That's where I came from. I started on the production floor. I worked overnight shifts. I wore rubber boots and sprayed the hose for a really long time, and then have kind of come into this position. And if you'd asked me cost of goods, what the cost of our, you know, our main beer's Pupil, if you'd asked me the cost of that 2 years ago, I would have not had a clue.
Yeah. So, and I think that's pretty common. I think it's pretty common for the average production brewer probably isn't as engaged with you know, the back office and knowing this stuff as maybe they need to be, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and over time, really what it's done is it's kind of set me free in my position. You know, looking down this road, it sort of changed the trajectory of my career, I would say. Essentially, we make decisions now, and I'm super confident with that recipe decision that that is not only is it helping quality, it's also helping the bottom line. You know, these two ideas are kind of at odds with each other. You know, if you could run your cost of goods down to zero, but you're going to destroy your quality, but you can actually work with them in tandem and you can engage with both of those things, and it can be incredibly valuable to the business across the board.
Yeah. And just one other thing I'll say there is I can think back, you know, years ago, situations of definitely like, you know, coming up with this recipe for this seasonal beer or whatever. And it's a afterthought in terms of like, well, wait, are we actually making money on this?
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely happens.
Yeah. So, okay. Define cost of goods sold for the brewers listening who are allergic to accounting.
Yeah, that's a good description. I feel allergic as well to it, but cost of goods refers, you know, this is from Investopedia, refers to the direct cost of producing the goods sold by a company. This amount includes the cost of materials and labor directly used to create the good. It excludes indirect expenses such as distribution and sales. And I'll dive into that further. I know that's kind of just sort of bland, but I feel like it's important to set it up, right?
Okay, so Teddy, how are accountants like brewers?
So accountants are like brewers. If you sat down at a table with 10 brewers and you said, how do you make an IPA? Every 10 different brewers are going to tell you 10 different ways to build an IPA, from the recipe and the development and through to the finished product and how you taste and evaluate. And accountants are a similar way. We were kind of surprised by that. So we had three different accounting firms as we were going through our growth phase. And every one of those accountants had a different approach to doing it. So it was sort of like we were coming back to square one each time we worked with a new group. So it was super important to us to get the relationship with the accountants down so they understood what we needed and we understood what they needed. And sort of that relationship was super important because we couldn't get anywhere until we could set that baseline of understanding on both sides.
All right.
So in doing this, it's kind of terrifying. So we always go by the mantra, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And so when you're kind of looking down as a brewer and you have no idea how much it costs to make the main beer that you sell, it's terrifying when you sit in that seat and you can't answer that question when someone asks it. So, you know, going down the road to figure out all these steps, you really have to, it starts one step at a time. And the key is once you define something and how you want to do it, you have to track it on a regular basis. And you have to keep tracking it and keep an eye on it and how it moves through the system. You know, you'll move things around as you learn more and more, or maybe you'll decide to adjust something because it actually makes more sense to go somewhere else. But set up a structure and kind of stick to it and watch it for a while. And then that's how you can actually start to make meaningful changes and see if the changes that you're making are actually affecting anything.
Cool. Yeah, I've definitely worked at breweries where, you know, this exercise was like a one-time deal, and then 6 years later they're still using the same same numbers, and maybe that's not really what reality is anymore.
Yeah, I mean, especially through COVID, it was, you know, there's such volatility in the market that everything was changing price. So you kind of had to do, I remember they're like, we need real-time COGS. Like, that's pretty difficult. You can do maybe monthly COGS, you can get to that point, but really that forced us to have to audit on a regular basis. You know, when a supplier comes in and say, hey, we're going to have to increase this price by that much. When you build a system, you can plug it in and you can see how that's actually going to affect things and understand the adjustments that you need to make it work. As opposed to just like, hey, we're just going to deal with it and we're going to move forward. But you can kind of piece together what all those things mean.
Yeah. All right. So, Teddy, what exactly is and isn't part of cost of goods sold?
Yeah. So again, accountants are like brewers. So you could talk to somebody else and they'll tell you that this isn't exactly right, but this is how we do it. So the bill of materials, this one's pretty straightforward. It's all the packaging that goes into the product and it's all the raw material. It's the cost of all the biofine, all of the hops, all of the malts, all the water to a certain extent that you can build that out and you can make it into a unit piece where the other costs, that's kind of, we look at labor, we look at taxes, shipping, that's shipping in and out for the beer, utilities, repairs, supplies, and maintenance. That's a big one. And then the work in progress loss, that's sort of the beer that didn't make it into package. We've put a dollar value to that, and it gives us kind of, it gives us benchmarking to be able to work towards.
Talk a little bit about that variability, because I'm totally with you. I've definitely seen different people say like, oh, well, you know, we include shipping for the raw materials. And other people say, oh, no, we definitely don't do that, you know. And I remember I even asked, this was a long time ago. It was when the Brewers Association was first coming out with some of their benchmarking studies. And I think I emailed whoever at the BA was in charge of that. And I said, hey, can you tell me, you know, what exactly is in cost of goods sold in this, you know, this benchmarking study? And they're kind of like, well, it depends on the brewery, because some people do it this way and some people do it that way.
Yeah, you kind of have to figure out how it works for you. That was kind of surprising for us too. We did some benchmarking stuff and like, well, are they just doing bill of material, or are they putting in the other costs? There's a lot of back work that you need to be able to see to be able to understand what a number means, and especially what it means for your business. So, and that goes back to kind of setting how you want to do it and moving forward with it that way. You know, we've put distributor shipping into our cost of goods line, which we did that from the beginning, and we've kind of stuck with it. And that just becomes, it's just built into our, to how we look at it. But
I'm kind of surprised there's not more of like a standardization of how to do this stuff. But
yeah, again, like, you know, that's why accountants are like brewers. There's a little bit different way to dry hop. There's a little bit different way to think about all these things. And we were sort of surprised when accountants would come back to us and be like, well, where do you want to put it? And we're like, what? You're asking, aren't you the ones that are supposed to tell us? Yeah, exactly. But they're absolutely right, because we understand our business better than they do. And so they'll put it wherever it needs to go.
Okay. All right. A minute ago, you said bill of materials. What's the bill of materials, and what does that do for us?
So the bill of materials, that's essentially everything that goes into the, you know, if we're looking at a six pack of IPA, it's the can, it's the lid, it's the box, it's all of the things that went into the liquid to go into it. And, you know, it become, we've had, this is again, it depends what brewery you talk to. Things like chemicals and CO2, we've found it's really difficult to track that on a bill of materials. You know, how much caustic did it take to clean the tanks to get this one 12-ounce liquid? It's really difficult to put that number to it. So we put that to other costs because it makes it easier for us to think about. Because getting that granular, we lose our minds a little bit. We're brewers, right? If there's one takeaway from this whole conversation, this unit economic process that we did really changed the course of our business and our thought process.
All right, well, let's hear about that.
So basically, you know, we were sitting, someone asked me what it cost. Pupil's our main IPA. Someone asked what it cost to make that. I didn't have that answer, and it was sort of a terrifying thing, and I didn't even know where to begin to validate it. I didn't know how to start, you know, eating that elephant. So it starts with this, you just got to sit down and tediously, you go through every single ingredient that goes into making the beer, and you have to validate three invoices that have come in for each of them. It's a little bit daunting of a task, but once you do it, you really understand, one, you understand how much the things cost that are coming in. You just have them in your head, whether you wanted them or not, you know, immediately. And you can kind of validate over time where what's working and not. It's this tedious process where you go through, once you do it with one beer, it's pretty easy to do it with the rest of the beers, because, you know, there's different materials that go in, but once you build the structure to do it for one, you can validate all the others down the line. And really what that does for you is you can look and immediately, so we were selling a 12 pack, and at the price that we were selling it at, it wasn't profitable for us. So we immediately we were able to say, based on what all these things cost, it doesn't make sense for us to sell this anymore. And it was, you know, it's a difficult decision to make, which ultimately on the brew side, we don't have to make that decision, but it gave us the power to say, hey, you know, a lot of these things as a brewer, like when you make mixed packs, you just have a gut feel, you're not making any money doing it. But when you do this unit economic process, it allows you to sit at the table and say, look, this is not making us any money because all of these external costs that we have to add on to it. So it really kind of sets you free to be able to give feedback to the rest of the ecosystem of the company. And it's also sets you free when the sales team, I don't know if this is relevant to MBAA. Again, this is where it goes into that BA territory you're talking about.
Yeah, but just say it anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, when the sales guys come and they want skinny cans and they want 19.2s in every brand, you can use this unit economic process to just show them that this is why it's not feasible. It's not just me as a grumpy brewer saying no. It's numerically, because that's how they think, you can show them that this isn't profitable to the bottom line. And it allows you to have a more meaningful feedback in that conversation as opposed to just having to be grumpy.
All right. I like it. What about all of the other costs that aren't part of cost of goods?
Yeah. So I'm sure that everyone kind of does this a little differently. This is how we've approached it. We do everything based on the case equivalents sold. And then we divide that based off of all of the dollar value of the things that we've put inside other costs. So basically we've got yeasted adjuncts. So, you know, chemicals, yeast, CO2, these are difficult things to put into that unit economic part I was talking about. So we've just pulled those out and we kind of have an understanding of how much money we're spending on them on a monthly basis. We're also, labor goes into that line, freight in, freight out, repairs and maintenance, general brewery supplies, utilities, and then work in progress loss. So basically we take all that number and we get a dollar value out of it. And then we divide it by the amount of CEs that we sold that year or that month. And that gives us it's a benchmarking number that gives us, we apply that to all units that are sold. So we can kind of, you can't get it that real time because that sort of has to come through the wash, but we'll track it and we've got a running average and we got to understand, you know, in the winter months, it's not necessarily, it might be a little higher because they're not selling as much.
Maybe because your utilities are higher or something, yep, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can track that and you can really see. So this has been really helpful for us. Like, for example, the work in progress, work in progress line there, you know, as labor fluctuates, if people leave, it gives us a numerical number to what we're losing. You know, we have more loss if people leave the packaging line and there's less trained people. We can see that number, which validates investing in the labor line to reduce the other line. And same with repairs and maintenance. Well, you know, repairs and maintenance was really, really high this month, but we had to get a seamer rebuild because you can see that our work in progress loss is trending up every single month. And then we can validate that to the powers that be to say, you see, when we made the seamer change, you can see that number went back down. So you can really justify the spending that you need to do through. And it's not much to look at here that you can pull it out and really start to see easy dollar trends that help the business in the long term and the quality in the long term.
Coming up.
We were filling tanks over the course of 2 days and that allowed us to fill them in 1 day, which was better for yeast health. And we were able to reduce 2 shifts of brewing and still be able to produce the same amount of beer along the way.
I'm John Bryce, and you're listening to the Master Brewers Podcast from the Master Brewers Association of the Americas. There's really only one thing that keeps this podcast going, and that's when listeners like you take the time to thank our sponsors. The next time you talk to a rep from one of these companies, be sure to thank them for their generous support.
Simpson's Malt operates 2 maltings in the United Kingdom, one at Tweed Valley and the other at Tibbetshall, St. Margaret. These sites are important because they are located within the prime growing regions of England's finest malted barley. Obsessed with quality, Simpson's Malt ensures its malts are produced only from certified seeds of the UK's finest two-row barley. Simpson's Malt, the home of good malt since 1862. Learn more at bsgcraftbrewing.com.
Get to know Proximity Malt. We malt superior, European-style, low-protein varieties grown close to home in Delaware and Colorado. Domestically grown, precisely malted to style. With our team of seasoned experts and 2 brand new malt houses, try what's really new in malt. Check us out at www.proximitymalt.com.
Are you sure you're getting the best deal? Visit the Lupulin Exchange, where you can find every hop variety, every brand, and every vendor. Compare prices, reviews, shipping speeds, reliability, and more. Over 1 million pounds shipping direct from every hop merchant and grower in the U.S. The Lupulin Exchange. One stop, all the hops.
Are you headed to Vegas for CBC? If so, please come see me at the Lupulin Exchange, booth 1281, in between YCH and John I. Haas. I'll have an awesome free t-shirt for you while supplies last, and I'd love to hear about your experiences on the exchange, what we could do better, and how I can earn more of your brewery's business. And here's what's coming up on the Master Brewers calendar. District Rocky Mountain meets at Prost Brewing Company in North Glen April 10th. District St. Louis meets April 18th at Urban Chestnut. District St. Paul Minneapolis meets May 9th at Shells Brewing in New Ulm. District Northwest meets in beautiful Hood River May 10th and 11th. The Master Brewers Brewery Maintenance Systems course begins June 6th. It's time to save the date for the 2024 World Brewing Congress. That's August 17th through the 20th in Minneapolis. And this year, the Master Brewers Brewing and Malting Science course runs September 5th through November 8th. Check out the full calendar of events at mbaa.com for more details or to find a district meeting near you. Now back to the show. How do you deal with some other nebulous things like waste? You mentioned a bunch of other costs that are not so easy to pin down to a specific SKU, but how do you look at waste? Because there's waste all throughout the process, not just beer, but labels and glue and everything else, right?
Yep, that's a great question. And so we learned, that was sort of a phase two in our learning process here, I'd say. Before we were kind of guessing what we thought our waste would be based on the canning line output, but they were all kind of guessed and they were never accurate. So what we've switched to is that every month we do a full inventory audit and we just destroy everything that isn't there anymore. And then that gives us another line that we can see sort of, that gives us a real canning raw material loss, if that makes sense. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that one came through, that one took us a little while to get to, but that's another one that's super helpful. And it goes not, I mean, it's pretty clear, but the work in progress loss line goes up with the inventory loss line, right? They're definitely, there's a correlation when you plot that out, because if you're losing more beer, you're losing more cans. So,
yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about other costs?
Yeah. One piece on that. So you can do it for CE sold. We'll also do it for labor. So we'll do it for CEs produced. You know, we'll brew to the forecast that the sales team's giving us, but sometimes we'll ramp up production going into the summer. And it, you know, you can, at the end of a month, you can know how, you know, was the team sprinting? Were they trotting? You know, beer ebbs and flows, right, on a cycle. And we know, you know how hard the team was pushed to understand, okay, last month, we were running pretty hard there. And you can see the labors, I mean, the CEs produced divided by all of those things kind of gives you a little bit of understanding for how the teams do. It's kind of team health as you're moving forward. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, that's interesting.
What we then do is we take everything we've done in the unit economic exercise with the bill of materials and everything that we've done to calculate the other costs, and we put them together, and it gives us sort of the overall picture of what it costs us to make a beer. And then we take that cost and we pass that along to understand if a beer makes sense to make or not, or if you need to adjust something in order to make it work. You know, the team's always coming up, especially right now, the team's always coming up with new ideas and different ways to innovate in the market. And then you can have a response that says, yeah, this innovation is a really good idea, but based on what we have right here, it doesn't make sense for us to do this. So it just sort of gives you a sound footing to give feedback to the rest of the company from the production side.
All right, nice. Okay, so after you've done all that, how do you tell if what you're doing is working?
Yeah, this is the most terrifying part of it, because once you do it, you got to trust it, and then you got to audit it, and you don't want to do that unit economic process more. You don't want to do it more than you have to, because it's pretty tedious. But once you do it and you can validate it, the way that we use a scatter plot, that essentially our resource development program, we can pull every single batch of beer that we make, and it can tell us the unit cost of everything. And we put that on a scatter plot. And basically that scatter plot tells us, one, we'll do a trend line on it. So it tells us if that beer is trending more expensive or less expensive. And it also tells us if there's outliers. You put it on a scatter plot and you see one that's way high, or it's absolutely at zero. And, you know, there's a lot of inputs that get to that, right? There's a purchasing, we're receiving it, the accountants are booking the dollar value to it. Then there's people that are inputting the brews. There's the packagers that are put, there's a lot of places where things can get missed. You know, you can run a full packaging run and forget to put the cans in. And you don't really notice that unless you put it on the scatter plot and you can see that, like, that batch was way lower than any other. That doesn't make any sense. We got to go back and look at that. So it allows you to, it's like a validation program that allows you to really trust the numbers, and you can really lean into them a little bit more without having to go back and recheck every single invoice that comes in, because that's not a realistic process to continue, if that makes sense.
That's cool. So you can look at this scatter plot and you can see, okay, well, that dot's where, Kenny put the Manway gasket on backwards and we lost 5 barrels. Or,
yeah, absolutely.
Or you're like, oh, wait a second. Like you said, we forgot to include, you know, bottle caps or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. Or we hired a new brewer. It gives you an understanding of really how much, and you can show how much it costs to train someone, because, you know, if they don't know what they're doing yet, you have to train them in, and there's a little bit of a learning curve, and you really see it in these numbers. You can see those ebbs and flows.
That's cool. Okay. So, Teddy, you're passionate about tracking and managing cost of goods sold. Talk about where you found success in reducing COGS.
Yeah, so this was we talk about taking pepperonis off the pizza. Well, that's the easiest thing to do, right? You're like, oh, why don't we just start dry hopping it? Just reduce it to half a pound per barrel. And that's from the onset in this project, we really didn't want to do that. That felt like the easy way. And again, you know, cost of goods and quality are sort of at odds with each other, which is, I feel like MBAA is kind of at odds with the idea of the P&L and the balance sheet. But we really looked at everything that we were doing as a production organization, and we kind of challenged all the thought process along the way. So the key for this one, I'll say, is that we have a tasting panel. It's pretty good. It's not perfect. I don't think anybody's got a perfect tasting panel, but we taste really regularly, and we're really adamant about tasting batches as they go through the system to understand if we did make a tweak, did that affect anything? Did people notice it? Kind of what are the most important things that we can adjust for flavor, right? Like, we know we don't want to reduce all the dry hops because that's an important piece to it. But one of the things we looked at, labor is a big piece of that, right? And labor is really easy to look at and say, well, if we reduce people, that line's less, and then you can be more that's really, again, it's sort of like taking pepperonis off the pizza. If you take the hops out, it's going to be easier. It's going to be cheaper to make the beer. And so ultimately, I guess what I'm getting to is we sort of started challenging. We used to dry hop. So we were making 4,000 barrels a year, and we would dry hop 3 times. For all of our IPAs. So that was 3 different days. Somebody was going up a ladder and dropping hops through the top. And now we have 23 fermenters, and we basically had two cellar people that were doing all they were doing was dry hopping all the time. So we sort of challenged that thought process. We said, okay, if we start doing 2 dry hops, what does that do to the flavor? And we actually thought it tasted a little better. And then we finally reduced it down to 1, which essentially made it easier. You know, it was less ladder. It was safer for the team, and it was less ladder ups and downs. And honestly, we think we got a better, this could be disputed, but we had a better shelf life because of the oxidative. We felt like we were getting more oxygen ingress each time we did those dry hops. So that single dry hop for us, it actually, we were happier with the product from there, and it was less labor across the board to produce that, and it was easier for the team to be able to do it. We were kind of, the cellar team was running all over the place doing all those dry hops, so we were able to kind of reduce the noise a little bit there. And another thing we did for labor piece was we started doing high gravity brewing. We were kind of scared to start, but our mash tun is oversized because we wanted to be able to make big stouts and not have to shovel the grain in all the areas of the mash tun. So we have a really big mash tun as it is. And so we started brewing high gravity batches, which allowed us to, we were filling tanks over the course of 2 days, and that allowed us to fill them in 1 day, which was better for yeast health. And we were able to reduce 2 shifts of brewing and still be able to produce the same amount of beer along the way. And honestly, we were really surprised. We were kind of nervous. Like I said, you know, when you start switching things up like that, it's a little scary. You know, you're like, as it's going, you got to be held back on the brew deck as we're trying different things. But we really, the flavor honestly tasted better when we did it. So we're really happy with that adjustment.
Nice. You also made some adjustments in regards to yeast drops too. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we were doing a lot of yeast drops, and we kind of started challenging, do we need to be doing yeast drops? After dry hop, we were dropping yeast every day, and like, do we need to be doing this every single day? Are we actually getting anything out of that as we do that? It was just looking at what the cellar, it was sort of auditing what the cellar team is doing on a daily basis and figuring out if these things made sense.
Okay.
And then on the brew house side, we did some high gravity brewing, but we found that there was sort of a law of diminishing returns. We were looking at brew house efficiency, but really what we realized is the important thing was brew house output, because the more liquid that we could produce off the brew house just meant that there was more liquid at each step of the way. And initially we were just throwing more grain at it. And we realized that when we started adjusting our ratios a little bit, we actually were able to drop, there was sort of like, once we got to 23 Plato, that's what happened with us. We reached our peak and we sort of reduced back down and we got better efficient. We got better liquid volume out of the brew house with less product, which was a huge savings for us across the board. And, you know, once you go through and you look at all the invoices, we basically went through this process that's ongoing that will always continue. We went to 3 different suppliers for every single, you know, there's so many different suppliers out there. And we talked to all the suppliers, you know, we gave them our minimum order quantity of all these things. And we audited it if we were actually getting the best price for all these things. For us, for hops, we make IPAs, we're going to get the best hops that we possibly can. So that's more in relationship and negotiation aspects. But for packaging raw materials, we're going to challenge everything that's out there. Is there a new supplier? Is there something different? Could we reduce it? If we ship it a little bit differently, is that going to make a difference? And we challenged our whole thought process there, which is, like I said, it's ongoing. Anytime a supplier hits us up, we'll happily take that meeting and talk through kind of what their value add and see if there's something that we could inject into the business. And that was pretty amazing. We were able to find a ton of things on the back end. A big one was shipping. We were leaving a lot of money on the table just by not auditing our shipping process. And now we have a sales. He's on the sales side, but we like to use him on the production side. And he just all he does is he vets out shipping companies when we're trying to ship something. And he's reduced that cost line by, he's halved it just by paying attention to that, which was kind of eye-opening for us. And I think as you grow, the more, again, I think that there's a certain aspect that big brewers would just kind of giggle at what I'm talking about right now, because this is kind of straightforward stuff when you get larger. But these were the growing pains we had to go through. There's a reason that 15,000 barrels is when you become a regional brewery, because all these things start to make a huge difference when you adjust them. And, you know, before you get to that point, you can make a little tweak and it doesn't make a difference. But if we can reduce 100 pounds of grain at 15,000 barrels, that's a meaningful difference to the bottom line, where when you're in the 4,000 barrel range, it's not a huge difference over time. So that was a big eye-opening experience for us that we've had to... We've learned along the way. It's funny, we were talking to the guys at Stone, who obviously have been through all of this, and seemingly this isn't a brewer conversation when you're talking about cost of goods and all these other things, but this is sort of, you set positive constraints and it drives innovation. So you really start focusing on the things that are, we're focusing on quality, but we're also focusing on how we can adjust this to make more sense for the business moving forward. So it's a new challenge, as opposed to just throwing all of the greatest thing that you can possibly find at something and seeing if it sticks at the wall. It's sort of like, okay, these are the parameters that we have. let's make this beer unbelievable with what, so it causes you to think about, you know, there's all these new hop oils. How can we use these hop oils effectively? Are they actually worth, you know, the extra price that they're offering for it? Does it actually make a meaningful flavor, one, a flavor effect, and two, is it actually increasing our efficiencies in the system to actually justify the increased cost of it? So you kind of start to think about, as these ingredients come across the table, you can kind of vet them out in ways that it's just interesting to hear how everyone approaches making a beer. There's you know, some places that it starts with the account, or it starts with the sales team, and they set a price and they give it to the brewers and they have to figure out how to hit that point. And some places just make the best possible beer they can, and then they sort it out on the other side. And we've kind of tried to feather between that.
I think for me, a big takeaway here is I think it's important if a brewer wants to avoid a scenario in which someone else is dictating sort of how they have to make the beer, unless you do happen to be in one of these breweries where they just kind of do what they think is the best possible beer and then work it on the other side. If you're in any of these other breweries where someone in the back office or salespeople kind of driving the process, this is a pretty important skill for brewers who don't want to just be told, you know, what they have to do and how they have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't reiterate that more, that it gives you, and more than anything, it gives you confidence and ability to sit in that room and have the discussion with them, as opposed to just sort of like, well, they said I got to do this and I got to figure out a way to do this. So you can really start driving that conversation, because I mean, we're a brewer-focused brewery, and we always have been and we always will be. And so we've always kind of driven that discussion, but this gives us sort of the extra pieces to really be confident as we're doing that. We've worked really hard to build a robust data system that, you know, data is just information, but we like to kind of beat it into submission until it gives us the answers that make sense for us. So we do a lot of work with trend lines and adjusting, you know, can we think about this differently? Do we need to put parameters on it? Or are we out of compliance? You know, are we high? Are we low? And real-time checking that and making sure that all those pieces come together. It's really made us be a more consistent brewery across the board by doing this exercise that started with the unit economics, but really it caused the whole system to clean up. And we're catching things that we never would have caught right away. You know, because we're tracking the volume coming off the brew house, we catch it. You know, if we've got a seasonal release and we tried something cheeky in the whirlpool and that yield is lower off the brew house, we used to not know that until the sales guys were yelling us at the end of the release that we didn't have enough beer to go out. But now we're seeing that in real time, and we're able to adjust, like, oh man, we got to put another brew up of that, because we can see in our data trends that that's not going to be enough to come out the other side to be able to supply what they need. So it's taken pressure off the whole team in general, because, you know, when you're butting heads with the sales team, it doesn't help the production team at all. So we've been able to alleviate a lot of other things through this process of just sort of like shoring up our data and our process in general.
That was Teddy Gowan here on the Master Brewers Podcast. Check the show notes for a direct link to Teddy's District Southern Cal presentation. Are you enjoying the Master Brewers Podcast? Let me tell you about a simple way you can help us keep making more. Take a minute to thank our sponsors. There's no way we could produce this show without generous support from sponsors like Hopsteiner, Proximity Malt, BSG, Berkeley Yeast, and the Lupulin Exchange. So please, let them know you heard their message on the Master Brewers Podcast and that you appreciate their support.